Gentlemen, I paged through last night. I paged through an interesting book. It's called Walking with Rabbi Miller. Does anybody know the book? Walking with Rabbi Victor Miller. It's a nice book. I don't know. I just happened to get it, and I happened to page through it. And there's an amazing story there, which I want to share with you. So, Rabbi Victor Miller was literally one of Gedolim in America. Mamash, one of the Mamash giants in Hashkofa, in Hanhoga, in greatest Bale Musa. So the story goes, when he was, this is Rabbi Miller himself saying the story. So when he was, he said, what was the saddest day of his life? The saddest day of his life. What he describes, Rabbi Victor Miller, the saddest day of his life was when he was in his early 20s. You know the story? He was a young man. And it was a job vacancy. He got a degree as well, I believe, in a college. But he was, of course, a musmach, and it was a Talmid Chacham. And he was off. There was a vacancy in a school in Baltimore. I understand it's a primary school where he was. There was a vacancy, and he applied for the job. And here he was sitting with, I believe, the manal and the governor for an interview. And just before the interview, there was another person. He noticed was in the waiting room outside the office. He was sitting next to somebody else, and this other person was also a candidate for that very job. And the other guy is by miles not as qualified as Rabbi Victor Miller was. Now Rabbi Victor Miller was an outstanding Talmid Chacham at that point already, and he had spent every spare minute he was learning, and he had completed a lot of masechtas, and he felt he was just the right candidate for that particular job. The other candidate, on the other hand, was known to be a very good basketball player, and he had other qualities, but perhaps not as advanced in his Torah studies. So, and he was quite confident, you know, between those two applicants, that Rabbi Victor felt surely that he'll get the right job. But lo and behold, 2 days later, he gets a phone call from that school. And saying, although yes, the interview went well, you've got a lot of quality and everything, but unfortunately, we're unable to offer you pursue this candidature So, in other words, we're polite enough to make that.
We wish you
great success. We will keep your CV. Of course, we'll keep your CV. Yeah. So fine. That kind of thing. And he was devastated. He was literally. He said, "It was my saddest day of my life because I really felt this is for me. This is my job. This is my career. This is my future." And he didn't understand why it didn't work out. So what he decided was, instead of staying in Baltimore, where it was just too painful for him, he went back to New York. And again, I don't know his background and where he lived and whatever, but I know he went to New York. At that very point, where that very first Shabbos, where Rabbi Victor went to New York, there was Rabbi Isaac Sher, who was a yeshiva of Slabotki Yeshiva in Europe. He just came for 2 weeks fundraising trip to New York. And he was literally there for, I think 2 weeks he was in New York, where he did some fundraising. And he was, for that Shabbos, he gave a certain share or a drosha somewhere. And Rabbi Victor said, you know, I've got nothing to do anyway. You know, I might as well go to it. He was blown by, he was so attracted by this shmuzi tribe and so much. And he started speaking to Isaac Sher from Slabotka. They started talking a little bit. And he was so intrigued by that whole school of thought and by that whole machshava and by that whole thing. And then after spending some time speaking to Isaac Sher, Isaac Sher said, you know, I can see you're a talented young man, you've got a huge potential, why don't you come with me to Europe for a little bit, why don't you just come to yeshiva with me a little bit? And Rabbi Victor Miller said, well, I've got nothing over here, I've got nothing to lose, might as well go to Europe for a bit. And he did. So that conversation, I mean, that led to him going to learn in yeshiva, in Slabotki yeshiva. Slabotka, he was in Slabotka, and he stayed there for a number of years, of course growing and maturing to an outstanding, unique Torah personality. Taki, shit happened then in Europe, he married somebody from Slabotka, and he grew into a most incredible, outstanding Bal Machshava, Talmid Chacham, with very, very unique qualities, which were developed and fostered and in Slabotka. He became a real Slabotka in Talmid and Machshava, and that's what he brought back after a number of years. He brought that into America, where he eventually flourished, becoming one of the Gedolim in America. Now, one could argue, and that's, I think, Rabbi Victor Miller himself argues that, what would have happened had that interview gone well, and what happened if he would have been offered that position. Now, chances are that he would have been a very successful, and he would be one of those mechanchim that really make a difference. He would have been very good, but he probably would have stayed in that part of the world and not growing into that godly soul that he really became. Probably, so the saddest day of his life is probably one of the one of the happiest days for Klal Yisrael, probably. Certainly for the, that it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable that we sometimes perceive things as such terrible, crisis and disaster and such a blow and such a richik from the Ribbono Shel Olam. But in reality, in hindsight, it turns out to be an enormous bracha, well beyond what one would expect. It's unbelievable. So that's in Walking with Rabbi Miller. I don't know which chapter, somewhere in the book, and I just happened to open up that page yet last night, just before I fell asleep. Okay. So that's I think quite an amazing. Now, how does that fit with the Haggadah, by the way? How does that fit with Pesach? How does that fit? It fits very, very much. Mm-hmm. That's not what I was thinking, but it's probably true. Pardon? I'm thinking of something else. I was thinking of the following: that when Yosef went to Mitzrayim, it looked like it was a terrible, terrible disaster. When Yosef went to Mitzrayim, he was nearly killed and murdered by his brothers. He was without anything, without any future, without anything. He was just as a slave. And look what grew out of Yosef. Just give him a few years, and he became the vice king and a royal in that incredible, from the dishwasher to millionaire kind of story. He became the absolute thing. What looked like a tremendous klolah became a tremendous bochum. On the other hand, when you look at Yaakov Avinu going down to Mitzrayim, I think that's also a very... Can I help anyway? Is there? You got everything? Yeah. When Yaakov Avinu, however, a few years... when Yaakov Avinu went down to Mitzrayim, the perception was Yaakov Avinu is going down to join his close family. He's got his son being the king. He's got wealth, yichas, protectia, power. He's like his mate. Everything great. And what turns out, within a few years, everything goes really, really sour, and they become slaves. So at that point, it looked like it was grand. It was brilliant. But the reality was, it was actually not so great. Just give him a bit of time. Yosef, on the other hand, what looked like such a klala, really turned out to be a tremendous bocha. True? Good. Okay. Rabbi Isai, pardon? It's the Yisrael of Pesach, of course. Rabbi Isai, Simon Lamed Hey, interesting concept. Here we go. Din Minyan Hashitin, just one Sa'if. Look at this interesting Mishnah Berurah in Sifkot and Aleph. We're going to see that in a minute. Noagu b'minyan ashitin. We're in terms of the rows, the lines. Simen lamed hey. Sorry, not lamed. Simen lamed hey. Uvoisi vechod. Noagu b'minyan ashitin. So that's how many lines, how many rows the text of the parshas are. So lichtoy b'shel yad with regards to the tefillin shel yad. We write shiva shitin, seven. Row, seven lines. B'chol pasha v'shel rosh, abo shitin, in terms of the tefillin shel rosh, we do four lines. V'im shina, but however, if a person decides, I don't want to do four, I don't want to do seven, I want to do a different amount, loy posel, it doesn't become posel, it's just a kind of minik. So that's what people tend to do. Mishnah Berurah says something very interesting. Sifkot and Aleph, no'agu, al piyat kabola b'yad ha'sofim. This is a tradition amongst the sofim. Piyat kabola, miyad sofim, piyat sofim. This is a tradition from sofa to sofa to sofa. Connects nicely indeed with Pesach, tradition, one generation to next, that we pass on the Tzias Mitzrayim, and so similarly also the Sofim, also they pass on the Minyan Hashitim from generation to generation. Ish mepi ish, from man to the next generation, that's the tradition, the Mesoira, how many rows we write in the parashas. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so the Mishmur here does point out here again about the import, just at the end of Sifkot and Gimel, he points out again the importance of buying parshas from reliable sofrim who know all the traditions in the Mesoras. Okay, we've spoken about this previously. When you buy parshas and tefillin, you should know where you're buying from. Okay, Semelamed Vav, Diktuk Sivason. What about the actual letters? Sif Alef Tzorich Ledaktik Beksivason. A person has to be very medactic, very careful the way you're writing the letters. Ha'osyosh. Shaloi Teshtane, that you should not change Tzuras, the shape, the form. Shum Achas, from any mehen, do not change, alter any of the shapes and the forms of the letters. V'loi Sedame Le'acheres, it should not look like any other letters. So, there's an important point over here. The letters have, we have a Masoret, the way the letters look like. And it's interesting, because what we know as the block letters are not the letters that we know in Sefer Torah, in Mezuzahs, in Parshas. The block letters are a little bit different. This Ksav that we use, obviously, for it's a slightly different Ksav, and there is a Masoret how it's meant to look like. So just because we find a particular letter looks nice, it may not be necessarily nice. There is a Masoret exactly how the letters are going to look like. Simla Medvav is going to go through what the letters look like. We are not going to be learning the details. If you go to the next few pages, you will see Mishtabua, there is even pictures of the letters. And that's the way they look. It's interesting because sometimes we find, I think the Gimel is one example, perhaps not the Gimel. There's some letters we don't find, they look so particularly, they look a bit odd at times. We don't find it so nice, but that's the way that it's really the way it's meant to look like. And that's, pardon?
Mishnah Sofrim.
Mishnah Sofrim, yeah. Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. He spent many, many months on this. Maybe years on writing this, because he was not naturally it was not really his sugya to know exactly. You've got to be a sofer to know this very well, and he spent many, many months getting to know exactly the style and the halachas and the thing. It was all project for him, which he spent many months or perhaps even years on it. And that's the Mishnah Sofrim. We are not going to learn Mishnah Sofrim. We didn't do last year either. We didn't do last time either. But it is what Sofrim we have to learn. Yeah, Sofrim. To learn through takes a long, long time, yeah. And there is a lot of Mefarshim on it as well. There is a whole Sefer on it. It's all Sefer on discussing the halachas of the Mishnah Berurah here in Mishnah Sofrim.
Any Sofer that you would say?
Yeah, they are fahed on this. The Sofrim, when they want to check, they want to pass their own fahed, that's what they need to learn. That's the Shulchan Aruch, yeah. That's kind of the equivalent of smicha to become a sofer is to know these halachas really, really well. Yeah. But we're not going to it's very, very technical and very, very, it's for expert knowledge for a sofer. But what is important for us to realize is that there is halachas about every single letter and how easily they could become possible if they're not adhered to.
For example, that hey, right, it's got every millimeter is
ma'akev. Yes, yeah, so that was one point we're going to speak about, the crown. So, the tagin, and what do you find about the ches?
The inverted roof.
Yeah.
The bit sticking out.
Yeah, but you can see that it's made out of two letters, right?
Two sides.
Yeah.
That's
the real shape of the letter. The shape is made out of two letters. Yeah.
The design's got three legs.
Yeah. Yeah. Now you can see the test also is really made out of yud as well. You see the chof is interesting because the chof I always find, and the chof and the lamed, I don't the lamed looks a little bit. I would say that the lamed looks a little bit out of proportion for many of us. But that's the way it's meant to look like. The lamed is meant. The lamed looks sometimes, and not only that, but sometimes in a Sefer Torah you'll find the lamed is literally a bit slanty, and to us it looks a little bit weird. It doesn't look symmetrical. It doesn't look so nice. But that is the way it's meant to look like. So that's important to realize. Rabbi says, the Rama says, "V'lachatchila yichtov b'ksiva tama." Person should write ksiva tama. K'mavu b'tur b'shapoyskim v'yodua tzel asoifrim. The person should write ksiva tama, meaning the letters should be complete. K'mavu b'tur b'shapoyskim v'yodua tzel asoifrim miyom shina b'tzuras aksav an apostle. Now he says that at times, and I'm emphasizing the words at times. If you change the shape of the letter, it does not invalidate it. It doesn't become puzzle. But at times, yes. Now, what is of particular importance is that what is always going to invalidate a letter is that it looks like a different letter. So if you've got a chof that looks like a base, or you've got a vase that looks like a chof, or you've got a U that looks like a Vav, etc. Those are always going to be possible. Exactly, yeah. So those kind of letters are always going to be a problem. But at times, they're not. And also, what is also always going to be a problem is that it's not connected. We've spoken about that previously as well. That if there's lack of connection, if it's not completely connected, that will always be a problem as well. But I suppose further details on that as we go along. I just want to do perhaps... Seif, there's a Mishnah Berurah which I want to see, which is Seif Katan. Seif Katan Aleph, Tzuras, in halfway, it's a Tzuras. Afilu im Shinui Hatzura, Yurak Bemiktasa Ois. So he says that even if part of the letter looks right, part doesn't look right, but could go in such as Shechosa Harosh Shel Aleph, if the top of the Aleph is missing, or koitz a yud, or the spitz of the yud, or shenogu yud a aleph, begag a aleph, or that the yud parts of the aleph are not touching the aleph. V'chadoimem, v'afilim atinu ki k'ru le'ois loy mahani, kim jonu yodim she'en tzuros le'a k'roi. This is a very important Mishnah Berurah, Rabbi Yisrael. Mishnah Berurah says as follows: at times, the letter will be posel, completely and utterly posel, despite the fact that even a child can read it. An example for that is what he brings over here, which is really common. I mean, which is fairly common. It happens that it's lacking in connection. So think about an aleph. If the aleph is made out of the slanty piece, and there's two yuds, one is the normal, and one is upside down. Now, if those two yuds are not connected to the slanty bit, the aleph will be possible because the shape of the aleph has to be completely linked, and the slanty bit must have the two yuds sticking out of it and touching it. So what the Mishnah Berurah says over here, that if you have got an aleph which may look like a beautiful aleph, and every child, literally a reception child, a five-year-old child, recognizes this as an aleph, but there is not completely connected, is in one millimeter, which is not connecting between the yuds to the slant of it, this letter will be possible. And the partial apostles have a terrible apostle, despite the fact that a tinuk is able to recognize it and read it. So, whenever we spoke about a tinuk, we've spoken about this more than once, whenever a child is able to identify the letter, that's if the letter could be a apostle, it could be a kosher letter. But if there's certain halachas which are not fulfilled in that letter, then it doesn't help that a child is able to recognize it. So I suppose this is the background to the Mishnah Soif, in which he elaborates in much greater detail the letters. But the Yisod is a very Yisod is the Gear Yisod. Okay, having said this, I wish you a very good evening. Yeah.